But there was a new data on the third kid on the block. It's called niraparib. Of course, this one has also received FDA approval already for a different indication. So niraparib was presented by Matthew Smith. It was an interim analysis of an ongoing phase 2 study. I've been seeing a lot of interim analyses recently. I used to never see those until the trial was completed. Now I'm beginning to see, especially with industry-sponsored trials, a number of interim analyses. So this was one. The entire study was supposed to enroll like 150 patients. The interim analysis presented on the first 40 or so. So it truly was a subset. And the interesting thing about niraparib is that they were using a companion diagnostic, which was a blood-based circulating tumor cell marker to select patients for enrollment. And this is quite different from the previous studies of olaparib and rucaparib, where they had to have tissue. It didn't have to necessarily be metastatic tissue, but it had to be tissue. So niraparib, for the first time, was using a blood-based biopsy. So that was the first unique aspect. The second unique aspect is they were mandating a very strict definition of homologous recombination deficiency, and that is patients were required to have biallelic inactivation. So as you know, every gene has two copies, including the BRCA2 gene. If you have a mutation in one copy of the BRCA2 gene, the normal wild-type version of that gene may rescue the function of the gene to some degree. So with this niraparib study that was presented at the ASCO GU Symposium, they truly wanted to select patients that had big-time deletion or deficiency of these genes, so they required a biallelic inactivation. Of course, they had to screen more patients to find the ones that were biallelic. But another interesting thing emerged, which was those patients with BRCA2 and BRCA1 biallelic mutations had very robust PSA responses and objective responses in the 30 to 50% range, respectively. However, in the population of patients that had non-BRCA1 and non-BRCA2 homologous repair genes, the response rates were very low in the single-digit range. So what this teaches us, or at least teaches me, is that not all of the homologous repair genes are going to be equal in terms of their sensitivity, and perhaps the breast cancer field and the ovarian cancer field got it right, maybe by accident, by picking BRCA1 and BRCA2 to focus on. And as the data is accumulating, at least in my mind, it looks like ATM probably will not be a sensitivity gene, and maybe some of the other homologous repair genes may also not lead to exquisite sensitivity. So probably these drugs, if and when they are FDA approved, they're probably going to be primarily restricted to patients with BRCA2 mutations and then the occasional BRCA1 patient.